Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 9th of September. This hour of the program, Judy Shepherd is our guest. Judy is author of The Meaning of Matthew, My Son's Murder in Laramie, and A World Transformed. You'll recall the story of Matthew Shepherd, who was beaten, tied to a fence, and left for dead near Laramie on an October night in 1998. The murder of the college student sparked protests, vigils, and calls for legal protections for victims of anti-gay violence. And since his death, Judy Shepherd has been a mom on a mission. Her book talks about Matthew's life and about the murder and about the movement that she is heading. She's co-founder with her husband, Dennis, of the Matthew Shepherd Foundation, dedicated to her son's legacy. The foundation committed to the causes championed by Matthew during his life: social justice, diversity awareness, and education and equality for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. Judy speaks around the country to a wide variety of audiences on behalf of the foundation to promote tolerance and to curb prejudice. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Judy during the course of this hour. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And if you would like to send an email, you can do that at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Judy, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, and thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah. You dedicate the book to all the Matts out there who feel that Matt's story is a reflection of their own struggle. Hope is out there, and change is coming. Matt's struggle was a long one, and you write about it in the book. From a very young age, he was struggling with his size, with his weight, and probably with his sexuality.
I'm not sure about the sexuality. He did suffer from depression also from an early age, maybe at all. Threw in there. He never indicated to me that he had issues questioning or wondering about his sexuality when he actually did come out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how long he actually struggled, if you can call it that, with the coming out process.
Yeah. I mean, struggling in the world with it, because the world wasn't as accepting.
Yeah, you know, I'm not even sure, Kathleen, honestly, if he was self-aware at a young age. I'm not really sure about that.
If he was what? I'm sorry.
Self-aware.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So the depression was a big thing in his life, wasn't it?
It was, and it plagued him from age 11 or 12 until his death.
Yeah. You talk about, let's go back to that dedication in a moment, that there is hope out there and that change is coming. Do you believe that deep in your heart now?
I do. I really do. During the Bush administration, I wasn't really sure how far we didn't get far at all. But this administration at least is going to be able to help us legislatively eventually. More importantly, I think that there is an attitude change across our nation at the grassroots level.
Mm-hmm. You received quite a bit of support from a senator who just passed away, who supported an awful lot of people in his lifetime, didn't
yeah.
he? Senator Ted
yeah.
Kennedy.
He was a great champion for our cause. Definitely. We miss him.
Yeah. He was in touch with you? He wrote to you?
He was. He did. He was a kind, wonderful, compassionate, empathetic man who understood, you know, the causes of the everyday man, which was always kind of amazing to me, because he certainly did not lead the life of the everyday man, but he definitely understood the issues.
Right. You're currently working on, we've worked on a number of things since Matthew's death, but you're working on passage of a bill, a hate crime bill. Each House of Congress has approved the bill 5 times since 97, and then it's dropped in final measures. You now talk about the Democratic-controlled Congress and a willing president offering the best odds so far to amend the law. You've worked on this for 10 years. Tell me more about what it is and how it would serve Matthew's memory.
Well, the bill as it stands now would add to the existing federal hate crime law. It would add the categories of sexual orientation, gender identity, disability, and gender. It would also expand the parameters of federal participation and to make funding available by grants for prosecution of crimes that fall into the category of hate crime, especially if the communities are lacking funds or if there is a lack of willingness in the community to prosecute a hate crime.
And do you think that it will pass soon, Judy?
You know, I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful. It is. It has passed the House again and the Senate, now attached to the Department of Defense bill. So it's in conference right now, and when Congress is back in session, they will take up the discussion of this bill. This is exactly where we stood in 2007, and it was removed from the Department of Defense bill while in Congress, in conference. So I'm not 100% sure that it's going to go through. I'm very hopeful that we hold a little more influence now in this Congress with this president. So we're just keeping our fingers crossed that it will indeed pass this time.
Mm-hmm. It was amazing. You relate the whole story. You were in Saudi Arabia when you heard about what had happened to Matthew, but there was a time delay and you had to get airplane reservations and you didn't know how really serious it was because you were so far away. It was amazing, the press that was there right away, and the fact that soon you realized that this was, as horrendous as it was, that there was another element in this that really attracted the attention of the world, and that was his death was an act of anti-gay violence.
Right. You know, I thought when we got the call from the hospital, when they said that Matt had been assaulted, immediately my mind went to someone not appreciating the fact that he was gay, because what we knew then about the gay community, what was in the popular press, was the discrimination and the violence committed against the gay community, sort of a rite of passage, even, if you will. So immediately my mind went there, and it was confirmed when we got to Laramie,
mm-hmm.
or to Fort Collins.
Mm-hmm. And it became the beginning of a very large movement, not that the movement wasn't there already, but a great awareness on the part of people. His funeral, it was amazing. People came from all over the world.
Yes, they did. It was amazing. I the word seems to be trite to describe it, but I don't know what other words we could use. It was amazing.
He had been a victim of violence before in Morocco, Judy. Can you talk about that and what your thoughts were about that and psychologically how that disturbed him for quite some time after, as it would anybody?
Right. He was on a senior school trip in high school. Because we were living in Saudi, there were no American high schools there, so all students had to attend a boarding school. The company that we were with paid for the boarding school, which is one of the reasons actually why my husband took the job in Saudi. Matt chose to go to a high school in Switzerland, and on a senior trip, they chose to go to Morocco on their senior trip. And while in Marrakesh, he was raped by, I think he said, three of the locals. He never really was very clear with me on the details of the incident. He felt very ashamed and responsible, as I understand many rape victims do, male or female. So I don't know a lot of the details. He was there for 2 days after the happening. The police in Marrakesh, he said, were very helpful in trying to locate his perpetrators. And then he came back to Saudi. Instead of going directly back to school, he stayed with us for a couple of weeks. He had a medical exam and a couple of visits to a psychologist on our compound. But he never really recovered from that. He continued to blame himself, as rape victims have a tendency to do, for what happened. He felt that he was partially responsible for what happened, for being alone and out in the crowd while he was there. He assumed a posture of the victim. The depression worsened. Anxiety attacks set in when he was in crowds. It changed his life and ours from then until he was killed. It just changed his attitude about the public in general, about people.
He was suffering from post-traumatic stress.
He was, and was having a hard time finding someone who could help him deal with that. Of the people that he visited, there was one. He was very hopeful with his approach, and then that gentleman was killed in a car accident.
Mm.
So, you know, it just seemed like one thing after another was not lending itself to Matt's recovery.
Mm-hmm. And it was one thing after another for him once he left you in Saudi Arabia, right?
Right.
He went was going to college and was having a hard time at the first school, went to another place.
Right.
Can you outline in those months and years, not many years, before he died.
Right. He was a freshman in college in North Carolina at a small private liberal arts school, one that he had been made familiar by one of his advisors when he was in high school. And he thought it was going to be good. It was a small school. It had a concentration in theater, which he was very interested in. But then after the attack in Morocco, he found he couldn't. His anxiety prevented him from participating. He was very anxious about being on stage and you know, being the object of people's attention on stage. Mm-hmm. He became very anxious about that. He had a hard time in class, concentrating and focusing, and he stopped going to class. There was certainly a sense of depression that we were unaware of. His cycle of roommates there were just couldn't have been a worse choice for Matt. And then he finally had a roommate that he liked very much, and you would think maybe that would help the depression, but it didn't. It sort of enabled the depression. So he dropped out of school, and he wanted to go to Raleigh to look for someone, a psychologist, to help him deal with the issues. That became difficult. There was a hurricane, you know, that year, sort of unheard of in Raleigh. And so he thought he would come back to Wyoming and be in a familiar surrounding. And then he decided to go to Denver and live in the city in Denver and work and get residency and go to college there. And then when he was in Denver, the depression came back. He had a hard time adjusting to city life. And even though I think in his mind he thought he was a city boy, I think in his heart he really wasn't. He thrived more in a smaller surrounding, I think. Mm-hmm. And he decided to go back to school in Laramie, which thrilled us, his family, because we knew he would be safe there. We knew that it was small. He already had friends there. Friends of ours also lived there. He was familiar with the city and the school, and we knew it was a good school. We felt he would be comfortable there, not lost in the crowd, if you will. So when this happened to Matt, we were astounded that that is where it happened. You know, it was very surprising to us.
Mm-hmm. God, it must have been horrible to go through that.
You know, it was. It was. We loved Wyoming, all of us, and still do. People who blame Laramie and Wyoming for what happened to Matt really aren't living in the real world. This happens everywhere in every community. It happens in New York. It happens in L.A. and West Hollywood. You know, it's in protected areas. It happens in San Francisco in the Castro District. It happens everywhere. So to think that Laramie or Wyoming was to blame for that is a mistake. Mm-hmm. We don't think they were responsible. We don't blame Laramie or Wyoming for what happened. It could have happened anywhere. And Wyoming, Laramie in particular, is having a hard time dealing with the fact that it is not unique to Laramie. In fact, they're beginning to go through a kind of revisionist history in parts of Laramie. So to try to explain to themselves how that happened, I guess.
Why could it happen anywhere?
Yeah, it could have happened. That demographic exists everywhere, which is what's so brilliant about the play, The Laramie Project, because it illustrates to people that that demographic exists in every community in our world. So, but it did happen in Laramie, and, you know, I just kind of think they need to own it now and move on, but they seem kind of stuck there.
Hmm. How are they stuck there?
Well, they, you know, when people go to Laramie, which is truly to be expected from Matt's community and friends to sort of take in Matt's experience, and they even try to go to the fence where Matt was tied, but it's been removed by the current landowner, who definitely does not want people there.
Mm-hmm.
But they go to Laramie to try to empathize with Matt's situation, to take in the community, and I think if the entire community was more welcoming to that it would be a healing process. But parts of the town are still in some kind of a denial about what happened.
Denying it in what way? That it was
a hate
related?
Mm-hmm. That it was a hate crime.
Yeah. And they are in denial about that because they makes them feel better about it? Or they...
You know, I think it's an explanation to them of why it happened. If they just say, well, it was just a robbery gone bad. It wasn't a robbery gone bad. It was a hate crime. And if they were at all in tune with the trial, they would know that.
Mm-hmm. And you go in great detail about the trial and about the actual night of the murder itself. That must have been hard to write. As I was reading it, I was thinking, oh, my gosh, it was you had to relive that. And I'm sure you relive it all the time anyhow. But it's you went through that night in great detail.
Well, I think it's the reason I wrote the book was to correct certain mistakes that are out there in the public view about what happened that night and about Matt and his family. So one of the purposes of the book, not only to introduce the public to the private Matt, as opposed to their public Matthew, but to try to set the record straight on a number of points, since I felt I needed to go into that kind of detail from my perspective about what happened and the investigations and the trials. I felt it was important to the point of the book, actually.
And how difficult was it? It's very poignant chapters, too, when you are in the courtroom with the men who killed your son, and the contact, the eye contact you made with one of them. Can you talk about that process of having to sit there and hear all of this?
Well, you know, you know what's going to happen, so you try to prepare yourself. And, you know, I really did pretty well, I thought, until they came out with Matt's clothes.
Yeah.
That was very hard for me to see them on display like that and talk about them in such a dispassionate third-person way as evidence. And Matt's watch and his wallet and those things that were so personal to him, and his shoes. And, you know, you think you're ready for that because you know what's going to happen. You're not going to be surprised, but you still are to actually see it. And that was the first time I actually saw it. I knew it was going to happen. I just don't think you can ever prepare yourself to actually see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then to hear one of the doctors say that there's no way to know that he was unaware of his situation being tied to the fence and left out there and not feeling pain and fear. I had thought prior to that that he was unconscious the whole time, but the doctor said that there was no way they know that for sure. That was very upsetting to me as well. It made it better to think that he was unaware for me, to not being experienced the pain and the fear again still. It was really hard. It was all really hard. And to go back there when really I haven't been there in several years, I kind of shut the door on that part of it. Just for my own survival. But you had to open that door to go back to those details.
Right.
It was hard. And I had to rely on Dennis and my other son, Logan, and friends and other members of the family who were there at that time to help me clarify the order of events and certain things that happened and people that were there and things that were said, because I really hadn't been back there for several years.
Mm-hmm. And your husband gave such a moving and pointed statement to the court, didn't he? It was quite something.
It was really important to him, and I think that's how he dealt with what happened. That's how he got his anxiety, his anxious, his angst, his hurt, his pain, his anger out, was writing and rewriting that statement over and over and over until it was just right.
Right. And Logan, we should talk about Logan, Matt's brother, your son. What a hard thing for him, how difficult it was to go see Matt in the hospital, how he sobbed when he was there, to see your brother in that kind of agony must have been so hard for him.
It was very hard for him, and it was hard for us because we were challenged in how to deal with his emotions and our own and what was happening to Matt kind of all at the same time. Thank God for family. They sort of came to the rescue and became very important to Logan's presence of mind when we were there. They took great care to make sure that he was okay when we were with Matt, and we did everything we could to include Logan in everything that we did at the hospital during the trials and in the last 11 years. We've been very conscious of his mental state and his emotional state as well.
Mm-hmm. How's he doing?
He's doing well.
Good.
He's doing really well. He actually works for the foundation now.
Oh.
And has a blog on the website, and he explained his growth process on a blog that he did on Matt's birthday last year. And actually it was very helpful to us, his parents, to see what he went through and how he guarded himself against further pain. It was quite enlightening for all of us. And I think it was therapeutic for him to write it.
We're talking this hour with Judy Shepherd. Her book is The Meaning of Matthew, My Son's Murder in Laramie and a World Transformed. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. She and her husband founded the Matthew Shepherd Foundation, and they are committed to diversity awareness, education, and equality for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. And she is with us this hour. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. If you would like to send an email, you can do that at talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. President Obama is delivering his speech before the joint session of Congress tonight, and you can hear that starting at 7. We'll be broadcasting this tonight on the Ideas Network. Judy Shepherd, our guest now, and we start taking phone calls. Barbara from Madison, our first caller. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning, and thank you, Kathleen, so much for this show. And I've lived up close and personal with this situation for many, many years, and have seen the kind of abuse that people take, and I feel a great sadness on the part of many people that fail to understand just what this community suffers and the fact that they can't get equal rights for themselves. They contribute richly to our country, and yet they are denied the things that we just come to take for granted. I'm grateful for your writing this book, and I will be buying it to give to my daughter, and she works very hard for the community, and I want to get your website so I can sign on to do whatever I can do, because there's much work to be done.
Thank you, Barbara. I really appreciate your calling, your words. The website is MatthewShepherd.org. Very simple. We do some really amazing things with a very small staff. Thank you for your call.
And do you want to talk, to broaden the discussion, to talk more about the abuse that is taken? Obviously, the ultimate abuse, tragically, for your son. But what abuse are we talking about? How extensive is abuse?
Well, the hate language that we hear that seems to be socially acceptable, you would never, never accept that as a society. Directed against anyone's religion, except perhaps Islam right now in this current environment, and the color, race. We would never, never, never allow that hate language to go on against other categories of minority. But you say that's so gay, or
right,
you fag, you queer, whatever. We as a society, we allow that. We continue to tell those jokes. We continue to use those words. We continue to mock and denigrate, you know, the gay community when, as Barbara said, they contribute richly to our society and always have. When we don't even allow to talk about great historical characters who were gay in our classrooms, that's just denying the truth. They contribute. They should be denied. They should be, I'm sorry, given every civil right available to every American, the right to hold a job. Because in 30 states in our country, you can still be fired for being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. We don't allow them over 1,000 federal tax benefits because they're not married. Well, hello, we don't allow them to marry, even though their relationships are just as important to them as everyone else, the straight community. And adoption is an issue. Housing is an issue. The military, for gosh sakes, don't ask, don't tell. What a ridiculous thing that is. We just continue to think it's okay to discriminate against the gay community, and it's not. They are human beings and American citizens, and to deny them their entire list of civil rights is just wrong. It's just wrong.
In 30 states, you can be fired.
Yeah, you can be fired still. If you were to ask the average person on the state, around the country, do you think that a person can be fired from their job because they're gay, they will tell you, no, of course you can't do
right.
that. You know, the level of ignorance about what's denied the gay community is just really extreme.
Thanks, Barbara, for your call. We go to Roger from Sauk County next. Hello, Roger.
Hello. First, thank you for your work and for writing the book, and so sorry for your loss. And I'm sure as you do your work, many people come up to you and tell you, but I've never met you or seen you speak, but in my friends, we've spoke of your son often, and he did not die in vain.
Thank you, Roger.
But I did call with a positive note. I live west of Madison, about 50 miles in Sauk County, which is northwest of Madison. And there's a wonderful woman out here in the town of Plain who started a PFLAG group. And for people who don't know, PFLAG stands for Parents, Friends, and Families of Lesbians and Gays, and is a support group, social group. And she started out here in a small town. She has a gay son. And she's organizing fantastic work this
summer.
That's
wonderful.
She and her daughter sat for 4 to 5 days at the Sauk County Fair with a PFLAG booth and had much more positive response than negative. And the negative was very minimal and not severe.
That's great.
And this past Saturday, my partner and I, along with this woman and her husband, marched in the Sauk County Cowchip Community Parade.
Great. That's amazing. Congratulations.
The parade route is about 45 minutes long, and I would say in that marching, I would say there were at least 100 different groups of people, whether it was one person or 10 people, who clapped, cheered, hooted, or gave thumbs up, and not one negative comment.
Oh, that's just great. That's just great. Yeah, at the grassroots level, I think we're making some amazing progress. And in Wisconsin, really, compared to the rest of the nation, y'all are a very progressive state. I congratulate you for that.
It's quite a story. Thank you, Roger, very much for your call. We go next to Tom from Burlington. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. When I read about your son, one of the same comments I read was that the only place there was no blood on Matthew's face is where his tears had washed it away. And it was just, what a picture that was. But you're so, I've been fighting for the civil rights and the Civil Union Marriage Act we had in Wisconsin for a couple of years, as Kathy is so aware. And they took the self-esteem out of same sexuality about 5,000 years ago. And a religious cult started it, and they've never put it back. Right. The Romans were not against the same sexuality, but there were other religions that were, and it messed up everybody's understanding of what human beings really are.
I agree.
The No Name study says that most people are bisexual. They're not gay or straight. They're a combination of both. And when you study the other apes in the ape world, that seems to be the case. But we became so arrogant that we've separated ourselves from the other animals we basically are, and we've lost our identity.
Yeah, I think sexuality is a very complicated issue. Gay, straight, asexual, bisexual, transgender, very, very complicated and very difficult to understand. But really, the bottom line is do we really need to understand it? It just is what it is. And it is no reason to deny people their civil rights and their safety and protection in the world. It's kind of beyond my comprehension. There's a lot of things I don't understand about human sexuality, but I've come to the conclusion I really don't need to understand it to accept it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tom, very much for your call.
Thank you.
Tell me about your process, Judy. You describe yourself, although it's hard to imagine you, as having been a quiet, assuming mother and wife to a civil rights leader. How did that happen in your life?
Well, I tell people that I am an introvert off the scale, and if you'd known me before, you probably would be surprised I can even do this.
Really?
A couple things. People tell me I'm very brave to do this. Actually, I'm a mom who lost her son to hate, and I tell people this is what happens when you piss off somebody's mom. They try to fix it, and that's exactly what I'm trying to do for Matt's friends and his community. I can't help Matt anymore, but I can sure try to help his friends and his community. How did I become this? If what had happened to Matt hadn't happened, if I still had my son who happened to be gay, I'd be the PFLAG mom baking cookies for the meetings. That's where I would be.
Hmm.
But that's not where I am. And that's not where Matt is.
Yeah. Tell me about these guys, Henderson and McKinney. What I know you write a lot about what their backgrounds were, what their families were, who raised them. The grief, actually, you expressed grief for the grandmother of one of them who raised him. Who are they?
Well, they are both serving consecutive life sentences. I understand that the prison, the penitentiary, state penitentiary in Wyoming is overcrowded, and so several of their inmates are contracted out to other prisons around the country. I currently do not know where they are. I think they're in the process of being moved around to various prisons. Wyoming is expanding, and they fully expect the two of them to be back in Wyoming soon after the first of the year. They had very difficult childhoods. It does not excuse what they did to my son. But I think maybe it might help explain their life choices. One of them was definitely a leader and the other a follower. Russell was not directly responsible for what happened to Matt. He did participate in the actually taking Matt away from the bar and taking him out into the prairie. But we knew all along that he was not a part of the actual beating of Matt. But the law states that if you do nothing to stop it, you're as guilty as the one actually doing the violence, participating in the violence. You're culpable for all of it. And we've not heard directly statements of remorse from either, and I don't expect to ever hear statements of remorse from McKinney, at least. Henderson may be a different story at some point in time. I'm not sure. But he's definitely the follower. He got involved in something that he never would have had it not been for McKinney.
Mm-hmm. Well, you heard, was it from McKinney or from Henderson words at the trial that you said sounded rote to you, that they were supposedly giving an apology, but it was hollow?
Yeah, they were. Actually, they both did that. I think at the time they were not fully cognizant of what they had done and were certainly not ready to take responsibility for it. I don't think they ever thought they were doing anything wrong because Matt was gay. They thought it would be okay with society if they did this to a gay man, that they would never be prosecuted for it to the extent that they were.
Hmm.
And I think society led them to believe that. As a society, we indoctrinate our population from birth that being gay is somehow wrong. We do it in popular media. We do it in advertising, movies, and literature. That's coming to an end now, but previously, certainly, we did that. And in certain religious areas of our country, we talk about how homosexuality is a sin. I do not believe that. I have not ever been part of that interpretation of Christianity. I think God loved all his children, and I think it's reiterated in the New Testament when he said our most primary commandment is to love our fellow man. I think that just screams acceptance of all our human beings.
Isn't it so hard to believe that anybody could believe that this was not wrong?
I know. I find that difficult to believe as well, but I truly think that's the case with them, McKinney in particular.
We welcome more phone calls for Judy Shepherd. The Meaning of Matthew, My Son's Murder in Laramie and a World Transformed is her book. Steve from Freeport is next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Mrs. Shepherd, my heart goes out to you. I think of Matthew a lot. My partner of 35 years and I are crossing the state line from Illinois to Iowa, and we're getting married, and we're going to light a candle for Matthew. And
thank you. Wait, congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hmm. When is that happening now?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That is amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. You know, to reiterate just what you said very briefly about the Christian faith and all of its problems, nowhere in John 3:16 and 17 does it say except for homosexuals.
Exactly.
Doesn't say it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love you. I'm going to buy your book.
Thanks. Thank you, and congratulations on your wedding. That's just amazing. Good for you.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we have some lines open for you right now. Judy Shepherd is our guest. Her book, The Meaning of Matthew, My Son's Murder in Laramie and a World Transformed. She is now the head of a foundation dedicated to her son's legacy, the Matthew Shepherd Foundation. And we have some lines open if you'd like to join the conversation. If you would like to send an email, you can do that as well. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. President speaks tonight at 7 o'clock to a joint session of Congress on health care reform. We will be carrying that live tonight here on the Ideas Network. Back to phone calls for Judy Shepherd. Nathaniel from Menominee is next. Hi, Nathaniel.
Hey there. How's it going?
Okay, how are you?
Not too bad. I just wanted to openly state, while I am not necessarily, I'm not pro-gay marriage, I'm not because of it due to religious standpoints, and I wanted to prove that it's not, you know, everybody blames people who are, you know, anti-gay based on religion and stuff like that, and, you know, why believe religion when it's just a big faith. And what it really happened was, back in the day, the reason why these rules of anti, you know, homosexuality and stuff was developed is because we were the same way that animals were back then. You know, animals don't have incest and homosexual love because they need to produce offspring, and they understand that if they don't, that doesn't work. For us, that was one of the big, you know, major goals, and we were trying to produce offspring, and we had to prevent anything that wouldn't allow that.
I understand that procreation is the basis of also Islam and many sects of Christianity, but to deny couples to be together because they cannot procreate is a little, I don't really get that. I mean, are we going to deny people who've had vasectomies or hysterectomies from marrying because they can't procreate, or the elderly because they can't procreate? That's kind of a bogus argument to prevent the gay community from marrying. And many have families from other relationships or adopt. I think that's very altruistic of anyone who adopts. So, you know, I'm all for people being together who are in love and who want to marry to protect their partner in life, be it gay or straight.
Let's go to another phone call, and it is Laura from Westfield. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I just had a question. If Wisconsin was one of those 30 states that you could lose your job if you were gay, I'm just curious what state I, you know, if I live in that type of state.
I don't have the list in front of me, but Wisconsin is progressive compared to other states, and I know you all were talking about civil unions, and it nearly passed in your state. I really was keeping my fingers crossed that that would happen. If you want more information about particular parts of the country that have those kinds of laws, if you visit the Human Rights Campaign website, hrc.org, they have those kinds of statistics on display.
And I'm almost positive that the answer is you can't lose your job in Wisconsin. I can be proven wrong, but I believe that's the case in Wisconsin. Laura?
Well, that's great news. All right. I have another comment just about my own personal family. I married into a family who's very, you know, don't ask, don't tell. And we have two people in our family that are gay, and they've both chosen to come out and announce it. And then they moved away.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking.
It is. It is heartbreaking to think that members of your family feel like they have to leave because they're not accepted or even safe where they live. It's common. It's also very sad. You know, your family is the most important thing in anyone's life, and to dismiss them because of their sexuality, I don't really get that. You should accept and love family members and anyone just for who they are, regardless of the sexuality. At the end of the day, does it really matter? The only difference in them is who they love, and that just seems kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, it's just really painful because, like, at family reunions, you know, they all say, well, where's Robin? Where's Danny, you know? And I said, well, they're not welcome here. That's what I tell everybody who asks me, you know, and then I'll announce it again, you know, and I'll say, well, when, you know, everybody gets their mind wrapped around that we should still love them, it's not any reason not to love someone in your own family, for God's sake.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And they're all missing so much of their families, family members' lives. To deny them acceptance is just it's inconceivable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting to a point where I don't even want to attend the reunions either.
That's
you know, and then they can say, where's Laura?
Right.
So,
right, and I admire you.
My heart goes out to you for your son.
Thank you, thank you. And I admire your acceptance, knowing that you will be, you know, talked about as well, I would imagine.
Mm.
Thank you for the call.
You knew that Matthew was gay, you write. Mother's intuition, we tend to know some things, and
right.
he was surprised that you knew when he told you. What about members of your family? Was it hard for him to let them know, and did he feel that it was important at some point to let them know that he was gay?
You know, there's a coming out process that's a very individual thing for everyone, and even though I knew and was ready for Matt to tell me, I say in the book I didn't really have a response ready when he did tell me. And I think that we all knew, I think everyone who has a loved one who's gay knows it kind of in the back of their mind. The part that becomes hard is bringing it forward because that makes it real. I don't know if, to my knowledge, no one in my family or among our friends rejected Matt when they came out, and I think maybe they did know. We knew that Matt was important to us and we were going to love him no matter what. But the coming out process is difficult even though you feel you're going to be accepted, because we condition our children to feel that way by letting, you know, popular media dictate the fact that somehow this is unacceptable. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be that you have to announce your sexuality. I mean, you don't have to announce when you're not gay.
Mm-hmm.
It seems sort of, you know, a double standard, but we're not at a place now where we can just do that. You have to tell your friends and family that you're gay. And when we get past that, that's when acceptance is really there. And that's the day I'm looking forward to. But I don't think that Matt found it easy to tell anybody, even though he knew it would be accepted. And I think he dreaded the most having to tell his brother and his dad. There was never a question of rejection there, but just the actual getting the words out. I think he developed a sort of scenario in his head of what it was going to be like if it was rejection. I think he was kind of surprised that it wasn't. And maybe even a little disappointed that there was no drama. I mean, come on.
You know, like
he
theater.
worked on this and,
yeah.
And to just be accepted on face value, I think maybe was a little challenging for him.
Let's go to Jim from West Dallas. Hi, Jim.
Hello. I want to say that, I'm sorry to say this, but when we were teenagers, we did some gay bashing in Milwaukee, and I think it was just out of stupidity and fear and ignorance, and I just want to apologize.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that, and it's very courageous of you to admit that now and to move forward.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. Alan from West Milwaukee. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Wow. I'm amazed that man called in and apologized.
Wasn't that big of him? That was great.
Whoa. My question was going to be, what do you think as an author is the reason why in Canada, which has Catholic religions and evangelical religions, why is it socially, politically, and culturally acceptable to be gay there, but not in the United States?
You know, that's a really good question. I wish I had the answer to that, because that's something I could work on. We have marriage in Mexico City. We have marriage in Spain. The Netherlands, England has civil unions. Why are we still lagging behind? I would like to know the answer to that as well. And I admire Canada for their progressive attitude towards gay acceptance. The government can't really control what you think, but they can control how you express it if it comes to violence. They have taken it a step farther and even have laws against hate language. I'm a little conflicted with that, but I do admire their tenacity in trying to enforce, you know, acceptance. Socially, it's not acceptable to do that based on race or religion, but it is on gay issues, and I'm really struggling with that.
I'm sorry that it has to be that way.
Yeah, I appreciate your call and bringing to everyone's attention that Canada is definitely ahead of us, as are many other countries.
Indeed.
Thanks, Helen. You talk about, let's spend just a few more moments on the hate crime bill. You've said that the part of the bill that you think is most important and you wished was in every hate crime legislation is education.
Right. I just think if people were made aware of the issues, as the caller said who had done gay bashing, ignorance is our biggest enemy. People who know nothing about other cultures and other communities, religions, ethnicities, it's fear. Fear causes us to do inexplicable things. And if we were educated about the issues, I think we would see far less of it.
And that's a big part of the bill. What does the bill? How does the bill address that?
This particular bill, the federal bill, does not address the education part. It would have to be state and local bills that did that.
Okay. Liz is next from Poinette. Hi, Liz.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Liz.
Hi. I have a question about possibly losing touch with a relative who you think might be gay, and that might be the reason that you've lost touch with them.
Right.
How do you reach out?
Well, of course, every instance is going to be an individual situation because of family backgrounds and all of that kind of stuff plays into it. I get asked that question actually quite a lot, and really the only answer I have is just to reach out and express to them in some way that is comfortable to you and acceptance of the gay community. Just hearing it makes a big difference, and showing it is even a bigger difference. If your family or your circle of friends includes members of the gay community, that says a lot to family members who are questioning the acceptance of the family. It's very hard to come out when you feel that members of the family will reject you. Personally, I would just rather know than just assume that rejection, but many choose to assume. And the only thing really we can do is just to let them know that we will accept in whatever way is comfortable to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your question.
Thanks, Liz.
And your concern.
Here's an email that's come in. Some fundamentalists have contended that hate crimes legislation could attempt to focus support for homosexuality on all of society and or criminalize expression of concerns about it. In that regard, some are suggesting that the assault on Matt involved a robbery rather than hate. What are your feelings about that?
Well, what happened, this is one of the reasons I wrote the book. It was a robbery. I mean, they intended to rob Matt, but they singled Matt out because they assumed he was gay. That alone makes it a hate crime. Choosing someone because of their sexuality makes it a hate crime. Yes, the robbery was intended, but it was because Matt was gay. That alone makes it a hate crime, disregarding everything that happened after that. The robbery alone, because he was gay, made it a hate crime. And to think that this bill, particular bill, is going to restrict people's freedom of speech, that is also erroneous. There is specific language in this bill that defines that issue, that speech will not be at all affected. This involves actions, not speech or thought. The only time speech will be indicated is if it is a speech designed to incite violence against the gay community. It in no way is going to hamper sermons at church or people disagreeing with the gay community. Only if it leads to violence will that at all be an issue. And I would hope you know that ministers are not preaching hate from their pulpit or wishing to incite violence, but this particular bill will have nothing to do with sermons and disagreeing with the gay community.
We go next to Sally from Minnesota. Hi, Sally.
Hey, you guys. Thank you so much for this program. This is amazing. I just called to let you know that I am blown away by what I just witnessed. The man that called and admitted his sin and accepted responsibility, I mean, wow.
Well, I know. It was amazing, wasn't it? It was very brave of him to do that.
And then, yeah, you...
Pretty cool.
The mother of the dead son thanking him for that. I mean, you have given him a huge gift. He is on his way to forgiveness and forgiving himself.
Right. Very important. That forgiveness of himself is very important.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sally.
Thank you, Sally.
Very much for the call. So tell me, we only have about a minute left. Judy, tell me where your work has taken you. I know you're working on hate crimes. You're giving speeches all over the country for a woman who described herself as an introvert. You're quite a different human being. What are you talking about these days as you traverse the country in addition to your book?
Well, I try to stay away from talking about the event, Matt's murder, because I want to talk about what we haven't accomplished in the last 11 years, not what happened 11 years ago, because there are still so many things that have not been changed, that have not changed in our country. I went to see the movie Milk and was astounded to see that the same things they talked about in that movie are the same things we're talking about still today, and even using the same language. exposure is what makes the gay community acceptable. We need to tell our stories, and we need to let people know what our lives are like so that everyone knows that your insurance man, your doctor, your pastor, your police chief, your fireman, your grocer, your neighbor, we're gay. We're out there, and we're gay, and we're just like you. The only thing that makes us different is who we love, and at the end of the day, that is irrelevant. We just need to be out and talk and continue to tell our stories, and that's what I talk about in my programs now, is how we need to move forward and what I think we need to do to be able to move forward. Hmm.
Judy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen, and thank you to all the callers.
Yeah, thanks, callers. Judy Shepherd, the book is The Meaning of Matthew, My Son's Murder in Laramie and a World Transformed. It has just been published by Hudson Street Press. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Rob Schroeder for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for your calls. We'll be with you again tomorrow. John Katz has a new book. He'll be with us for one of the hours. And, of course, we'll respond to the healthcare speech, which will be aired tonight at 7, President Obama addressing the joint session of Congress, and we'll examine it as well. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.